Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events relating to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Welcome you once again to our program, Polygamy, What Love Is This? This is a live broadcast from Salt Lake City, Utah, and we talk about polygamy here. It's a live telephone call-in program, so a little bit later we'll be opening up the telephone lines. You can call in and ask your questions, voice your concerns, and your comments about the subject of polygamy. My name is Doris Hansen, and I'm the host of the program tonight. I was born and raised in a polygamy group, a local group here in northern Utah. And I was claimed at birth by a polygamist person, and when I got old enough to be married off to him, he was more than twice my age. He had already a dozen wives, and I ran away. I didn't want to have any part of it. So I didn't know the pain of actually living the polygamous lifestyle. However, I was raised in a polygamy family. My mother was a polygamist. My dad had two wives and 16 children. And, you know, that's really a rather small family for a polygamy group. But I did see the pain, and I saw the anguish, and I saw the challenges that polygamy families have. And so we have this program here to talk about polygamy and the challenges of polygamy groups. And the purpose of this program is to talk about it, to bring out and to discuss much information and the mysteries that are surrounding modern day and also early Mormon polygamy. I'd like to remind all people who are watching the show, if you're in a polygamy group, to go to shieldandrefuge.org. Webpage is shieldandrefuge.org. And on that website, you'll find a lot of information about polygamy, a lot of biblical articles about it, because it is claimed that because Bible people lived it, it's the thing to do. And that kind of will give you a better perspective on it. There's also a page on there you can click where stories of people who were born and raised in polygamy groups and have successfully left and have no regrets. There's also a contact page if you want to talk to someone, and if you want to discuss anything, you're welcome to contact them off the contact page, and everything will be held in the strictest of confidence. Our telephone number to call in as we open up the phones a little later in the program is 801-973-TV20. That's 801-973-8820. You might want to jot that down so that you'll have it handy when we do open the phone lines and you can get on the telephones with us. You can go to webpage aboutpolygamy.com, and on that webpage you'll find future programs, who we're going to be interviewing in the future, and you can also find streaming video for previous programs. Maybe you've missed one, or perhaps you know someone's outside of the viewing area who would like to watch the program. You can go on there and click on any of the previous programs. We're about a week behind on that. And also, we are working on, in the future, hopefully we'll be able to have it up soon, live streaming video, so that if someone's outside of the viewing area, they would be able to watch it as we do the program. And then one last reminder about our email address is tv@aboutpolygamy.com. And you can go to that email address and send us your comments about the show. You can send us what you would like us to cover in future programs. And anything that you would like to talk to us confidentially, also, you are welcome to do so with that email address. Tonight I would like to talk about a particular myth that surrounds early Mormon polygamy, the practice of polygamy. I know there is a lot of myths that that are said for polygamy to have been practiced in the early days. And one of the myths that I would really like to cover tonight is that people believe that the reason polygamy was practiced was because there was an excess of women. And because there were more women than men, the men would marry the extra women to provide for the widows and for the orphans and their children. And while this sounds like a very charitable thing to do, when we think about the reasoning, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And besides not being logical, it isn't factual. So let's look at the facts, and then we'll talk about the logic of it. The fact is, there were consistently more males than females in the territory of Utah in the early West. The Utah Historical Society has these figures, as well as the United States Bureau of census. And these are the statistics for the early years of the territory of Utah. In 1850, there were 712 more men than women. In 1860, there were 237 more men than women. In 1870, there was 1,456 more males than female. In 1880, there was 6,055 more men than women. Hold on. 1890, there was 13,171 more men than women in the state of Utah, or the territory. And in 1900, there were 6,625 more men than women. So you can see these are official figures, and you can see that there was consistently more males than females. Now the story also goes that there were a lot of men that were killed in the Mormon Wars, and when they made their trek west, there were a lot of deaths, and there were deaths, but there were women and children that died as well. And the figures for the Mormon Wars is less than 100 men dying in those, less than 60 for some. So that it just doesn't add up that would be the reason for polygamy. And besides that, the pioneers came here in 1847, and polygamy was being lived a long time before that. Now for the logic. If it were true, even if it were true, that there were more women than men, why does a woman have to be demeaned into living polygamy and to be a plural wife in order to get help from the society? Can't they take care of their women and children without forcing them to become a plural wife? Why couldn't they let her stay single so that if a single man came along, she could marry him rather than marrying a man that already had too many wives? So, and if you read the Doctrine and Covenants, section 132, you won't find anything in those verses that talk about the reason to live to polygamy to be benevolence and to be a welfare program at all. It wasn't. It was the celestial marriage polygamy verses that's in section 132. And so we see that that is not a good reason to state for people living polygamy in those times. Well, I'd like to introduce our guest tonight. Our guest is a special person. He's also a personal friend. He is an advocate for the harmony and help for polygamous communities in the state of Utah. He is the official spokesperson for the Attorney General's office, Mark Shurtleff. He, at one time, up until just a few weeks ago, was overseer of the Safety Net Committee, the organization that brings together the HELPS networks of services with government, polygamy groups, and better understand the polygamists to help curb abuses within the groups. And I would like to introduce Paul Murphy, and I thank you for being here to come on your time to represent your office. We really appreciate you being here, Paul.
Doris, I appreciate being here. I remember about a year ago talking and how that even though you are no longer associated with the polygamous group, that you still cared about the plural families and you wanted to help them. And one of the biggest issues that we face is the lack of communication and the isolation. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that you're out here talking about this issue and raising the issues goes a long ways, and I hope that will help foster better understanding between all people.
Thank you, Paul. And they do. They are on my heart, very heavy on my heart. I'd just like to see the truth be told in the groups rather than some of it is just, you know, done heavy-handedly, and we'd just like to see that change, and I know you'd like to see it as well as we would like to see that happen. So we have some questions that we want to ask you about your job and about what you know about what you've been doing with the different polygamy groups. I know there's a lot of mystery that surrounds the living of polygamy, and some people are afraid to deal with polygamists. They think they're different, and so they're just kind of like hands off, back off. I won't hurt them, but don't let them come near me. And right. And we don't want them to do that. We want to. They're people too.
Right. You know, I've found that there's a lot of what psychologists call black and white thinking, that everybody that's in a polygamous group is bad, and everybody outside of the polygamous group is good, or everybody in the government is bad, or everybody in the government is good. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of emotional charge with this issue. A couple of weeks ago, our neighbors had a open house where our Muslim neighbors wanted to just explain their beliefs, share what their lives were all about. And it was this really enlightening evening. And after it was all over, I was talking about how that I work with polygamists. I have a lot of discussions with polygamists. And my neighbor looked at me like I was crazy. I mean, he, after just talking about breaking down the stereotypes and the barriers with the Muslim community, he couldn't process yet the idea of doing the same thing with the polygamous community as well.
Wow, that's interesting. Just aside on that, are they the Muslims giving up their polygamy practices here too?
This particular family is not polygamous.
Just, I don't know why I wanted to know that. When we first were discussing what you wanted to talk about, what issues you really wanted to cover tonight, you mentioned, I think, three basics that you wanted to cover. So we'll cover those three, and then we can get on to other things if we have more time. The first thing you talked about you wanted to cover was you wanted to talk about the state's efforts to prosecute crimes within the polygamous communities.
Right. You know, I mean, it's interesting. Back in 1953, which was the last time there was a real concerted effort to go into a polygamous community, round everybody up, arrest people, take the women and children, turned out to be a real disaster. Some of the men went to prison for a short time. The women and children were put into a foster care. They all came back very distrustful of the government. The government had such a bad experience. The governor of Arizona lost his bid for office after it was over. And so everybody just thought, hands off, we're not going to do anything with polygamists. They'll be there, we'll be here, and never the two shall meet. Uh-huh. And I think that raid was a big mistake, but I think that inactivity and that lack of communication for the 50 years after that was a bigger mistake, because it led to isolation. It led to victims within that community not having access to the same resources that everyone else has if there is a problem, mm-hmm. and it allowed perpetrators within that community to get away. Mm-hmm. And so we still don't know whether or not there are more problems or less problems within polygamous communities. We know that there are bigger barriers for victims within those communities to get help. Mm-hmm. And so for the past 5 years, we've tried to break down those barriers, open up the lines of communication, and really create a place, a safe place, where victims can go and get help. We can deal with individual problems individually instead of arresting the entire community. If there's a problem within one family, we can deal with that one particular mm-hmm. family.
And are you finding that that is effective? Have you had people that's trusting you to come forward with
Absolutely.
Abuses?
We've actually, we had a grant where we were able to help more than 1,300 victims of domestic violence.
Within polygamous groups.
You know, and basically what you're seeing is the same thing that's happening in any other community. There is domestic violence across every type of group there is. And mm-hmm. so what we're trying to do is make sure that the victims within that community has the same help as anyone else.
Right, exactly. And of course their needs are unique in some respects.
And that was one of the things we discovered. 5 years ago, Attorney General Mark Shurtleff held what was called the Polygamy Summit. And he brought all the law enforcement people to talk about the law enforcement issues. He brought all the social workers to talk about the social issues. And, you know, and we identified certain problems, certain areas. It was the first time that I'd heard of the issue of the Lost Boys. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were all these new things. We said, well, what are we going to do about it? And so that's when we started to do something about it. And we started what was called the Safety Net Committee. Uh-huh. And basically we brought government agencies, nonprofit groups, and the polygamists themselves to start talking about the issues and identifying ways we could work together to solve those problems. One of the first people I met was a woman named Carolyn Jessup. And she had left the Colorado City area with 8 children. And she basically came out and said, I just didn't fit. There weren't enough services. There wasn't enough help. I just finally read her book, Escape, and she talked about her whole experience. And I've always thought about her and about the unique problems she had, the cultural barriers that she faced, the bureaucracy she faced. And we're trying to break that down so that it's easier, that if you're in an abusive relationship, that you can come out, you can get help, and that you do fit within the system. I mean, it's created a lot of moving on both sides. The polygamists have had to learn more about how to access government services. Uh-huh. The government agencies have had to learn how to deal with this very unique culture.
And to do that without shame.
Right. Oh, know? Absolutely.
I mean, there's so much shame attached to it sometimes.
And that's true everywhere. You know, when you're dealing with domestic violence, mm-hmm. if you're dealing with child abuse, I mean, mm-hmm. it's still your family. You still love your family. You still love your community, but there's still a problem that has to be addressed. And mm-hmm. so, you know, the women and the children who come out, who tell their stories and get help, they are some of the bravest people I have ever met.
They are. I've read Carolyn Jessup's book, and it's absolutely, it's amazing what she went through. What kinds of resistance or cooperation do you experience directly with the polygamous groups in this endeavor?
You know, there's still a great deal of bridge building that needs to be done. There's still a lack of trust. Mm-hmm. The raid in Texas actually created more barriers as far as trust was concerned. And after the raid occurred, I mean, polygamists that I've known, I've chatted with for years and years, they said, you know, we were just ready to walk away from the table. Hmm. We thought, you know, if this is the result of all the work that we've been doing, we're going away and we're going to go back to keeping a low profile, not talking to anyone. And then they decided, you know what, that's not going to help. And so they decided to stick with us. They're still talking with us. They're working with us. But, you know, trust is a big issue. The government has to earn trust, and the polygamists have to earn trust from outsiders as well.
Sure they
there's
do.
There's still a great Stigma. Deal of mistrust on every side in this
yeah.
issue.
Yeah, there is. There certainly is. So when you were inviting the polygamists to join your safety net committee meetings, were there very many at the beginning that jumped on the chance, or did you kind of have to woo them to come and join the meetings?
You know, we benefited by a couple of ladies that belong to an organization called Principal Voices, and they are advocates for the polygamous communities, and they acted as liaisons and talked with the groups and brought in some of the groups that I thought would never in their wildest dreams would I ever imagine that would be sitting at the same table. And, you know, some people are very critical of that idea, but if you really want to get information out, if you want people to know about domestic violence, you want people to know about child abuse, that means you got to be talking.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have people from pretty much all the major polygamous groups sitting at the same table, asking for trainings to come into their communities to talk about parenting, child abuse, domestic violence, internet safety, never in my wildest dreams did I expect that to happen, and it's happened quicker than I thought it would. But the truth is, we've got 150 years of history to deal with, and I think we have a long ways to go.
Mm-hmm. I think of the parenting, how nice it would have been if my mother had taken parenting classes. But at the same time, they thought they had the market, the corner on the market of how to raise a child. And I'll tell you, it was... they needed classes.
And that's the whole thing, Doris, is the lack of information. If you're raised in a society or in a family where this is the norm, then why would you know any different? Why would you know that there's not a different way to handle stress within a family or a better way? And so that's why these classes are so important, because it just gives them options, different options. If a child is misbehaving, are there different options on dealing with that misbehavior?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm seeing a lot of doors open, and I'm still seeing a lot of people standing on the sideline going, do I really want to get involved with this? Does this put my family in greater danger or jeopardy? And so... I'm grateful that there are families who have trusted the system, trusted that they would be helped, and that they've gotten help, and for the most part, it's been very positive.
Mm-hmm. I was at one of the meetings where a couple came in. I won't mention the group, and I won't mention who they were, but he was. They were both kind of looking around in trepidation, and you welcomed him, and he said, it's nice to come to a place where I'm not looked at as some kind of a weirdo, you know? And he did feel comfortable being there, and that's good. You wanted to talk about helping to break down the barriers. What kind of barriers are up? And we've kind of been covering that already, but are there other barriers we haven't covered yet that you need to break down barriers? What's up that would hinder and how much progress is being made with that?
You know, I think we're still learning. You know, one of the things we've learned in the FLDS community that's really important to treat everyone with respect, not to look down on their culture. To dress conservatively when you're working with those families, because if you show up in a tank top or, you know, in immodest clothing, it really creates some barriers as far as offering help. I think the language can be different, and certain words mean different things, and understanding what those words mean. And I think there's just really a need to learn and to know these people. I mean, it's really easy to demonize people because you don't know them. Once you get to know them, you can understand the problems, the strengths, and the positive things that are going on within their families. Then I think you really can address if there's a problem and really offer some help.
And people hear the bad stories about what polygamists do, and so, like you say, paint it with a broad brush, and so they think everybody is like that. And there are some very, very, very nice people in the groups.
There are great people. I've heard the horror stories. I've talked to the people who've experienced the horror stories. I've also met some great families. I've met some parents that are awesome parents, mothers who take really good care of their children. And, you know, I've also learned that certain families and certain polygamous groups have become models for the other polygamous groups on how to work with outsiders, how to work with government agencies.
Good.
I'll share with you one story. On the night that the raids were taking place in Texas, I was in a polygamous community, and I told them, one, that I didn't think there would ever be a raid again, because I thought it would never happen. And I still don't think there would ever be a raid in Arizona or Utah. I think we can address the problems individually.
Yeah.
And two, a family stood up and said, we had a problem within our family. We called CPS. They came in and dealt with the problem. They made our family stronger. They made things better. And it, you know, and the truth is, you never hear any family that's had an experience with a social worker that it was a good experience. They said this was a good experience. Our family was better from it. And so there are some really cool things going on.
That is, absolutely. One of the things you wanted to cover is how you're helping the victims within these communities. So tell us how successful you are in discovering the victims and responding to calls for help.
You know, it's still difficult. You know, there are barriers. They're still afraid that, one, that they're being watched, or two, that that the government really isn't going to help them. And that, you know, that they, in some polygamous groups, they've been taught that the government is evil, and they're only here to destroy your religion and your family and break up this eternal principle. And so those barriers are still there. I think what we're finding is that the people who have been in abusive relationships have gotten help. Then they are able to tell their stories to the people who are still within those groups and say, it is possible to get help, and it doesn't have to destroy everything about your family. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the coolest things that's going on right now is that some of the people who have left the FLDS community are now moving back into Colorado City in Hilldale, and they're staying there. They're working among the people. One lady I know, Stephanie Colgrove, is in the process of building a library in Colorado City.
She
still loves her community. She still wants to help them. And I think that's going to be the key to the future, that the people that maybe they had a bad experience, but they still love their community. And I hope that they will stick around and be strong enough. And that may not be true for everyone, but for those who can, that they will be strong enough to stay and offer help.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's good to hear. I'd like to remind you that we'll be opening up the phone lines in a few minutes if you want to call the number 801-973-8820. Do you find that because of the super secretive nature of polygamy groups, that abuses are not so easily reported? Because now I've talked to some people and they are scared to death they're going to be arrested. I've talked to one woman who is the first wife. Her husband had several wives, and she was afraid she would be arrested, and she wasn't even guilty of anything.
Right.
Do you find that because of that
it's true in almost every domestic violence case, and I think it's exacerbated in a polygamous community because for the most part, they are living underground or under the radar, and so there hasn't been a lot of positive interaction with the government. And that fear is real, and that's one of the things we're really trying to overcome. And I think it's going to take some time, but you know what you talked about is absolutely true. There are victims who just feel like, you know, if I tell, only bad things are going to happen to me. And the truth is, if you tell, that's the first time that you're finally going to be able to get help.
When I was in the group, and I know that that this does happen still currently, we were so threatened if we talked to anybody on the outside about what was going on inside the group that we would lose our salvation, we would lose whatever redeeming qualities we had whatsoever. Do you still find that as a hindrance?
I still hear that from people who have left some of the polygamous groups. I worry about it. Last month, I was invited to speak at the International Cultic Studies Association.
I read about that.
And it's an organization that deals with closed groups throughout the world. And they identify a cult by what's called the BITE model, a group that has control of your behavior, your information, your thoughts, and your emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also describe destructive cults as ones that use those methods to control the people in a negative way towards their own individual needs. And so there are some of those kind of techniques going on in some groups. there are actually those types of techniques going on in families, mm-hmm. you know, within polygamy and outside of polygamy. I mean, mm-hmm. it happens everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And also, even in the group I was in, one family would be different than another.
Right.
My family was more strict than some of the other families were inside
right.
the group.
And I think that's the key, is you can make a lot of assumptions, but until you talk to the person, you really don't know what's going on in their life.
Right.
Because even though they belong to this group or that group, it may not be true of everybody, and, mm-hmm. and not all FLDS people are the same. Not all people who belong to the Davis Co-op are the same. Not everybody who belongs to the Apostolic United Brethren are the same. They're very different, even within those groups.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Okay, let's go to the next question then. When somebody calls, I don't know who they would call in particularly, and maybe you can give us that information, who they should call for our viewers. If there is abuse going on in the home, if it's sexual abuse or emotional or physical abuse, who do they know who they're supposed to call to get their help, and what does the Safety Net Committee or your office do as a response to those kinds of calls?
Well, hopefully they have enough trust in the system that they'll just call 911 just like anyone else. If not, one of the best programs I've seen is the Domestic Violence Information Line, and they are specifically trained to help victims of domestic violence, and they've received additional training and have worked for the past 5 years working with polygamous communities. So they know the culture, they know some of the problems, they know some of the barriers, and they really can offer the help. They know where to get shelter, they know where to get food, they know mm-hmm. where to get legal services. And so a call to the Domestic Violence Information Line will go a long ways to helping anyone. And I would highly recommend if anyone is in an abusive situation that they would call that number and get the help that they need.
Mm-hmm. And don't fear calling that number if any of our viewers are in an abusive situation. Don't fear calling that number, because there is help out there for you. Okay, we have a call come in, Sheila from Ogden, a first-time caller. Let's take her call. Line 2, Sheila? Hello, Sheila?
Hello?
Hello, is this Sheila?
Yes.
Okay, welcome to the program.
Yes.
What is your question?
Well, I just wonder what gives them the right to even be a polygamist.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
I just want to know what gives them the right to be a polygamist.
What gives them the right to be a polygamist?
I think you're asking a question that a lot of people ask. Right now, polygamy is against the law. Why, you know, a question I get asked almost every single day is, why aren't you arresting every single polygamist in the state of Utah? And I think it's a good question. Polygamy is against the law. We have had cases in the past where we have charged people with bigamy when they've also been involved with an underage sex with a minor or incest or other different types of crimes. But for the most part, we aren't actively prosecuting consenting adults who are in bigamous relationships. And part of the reason is deciding where to put your resources. If we were to start arresting every polygamist, we would need to find prison space for 10,000 adults. We'd need to find foster care for 25,000 children. And what we found is that it is as difficult to prosecute a child abuse case as it is a polygamy case. You can't just say you're a polygamist, you know, come throw yourself to the mercy of the court and we'll put you in jail.
Mm-hmm.
You actually have to have a victim to testify. You need witnesses to testify that polygamy is actually taking place. And so people think it's an easy crime to prosecute. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as difficult as mm-hmm. any other crime, and it would take a tremendous amount of resources. Local law enforcement for the past 50 years has essentially ignored all crimes within polygamous communities. We've decided to go after the worst crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Child abuse, domestic violence, and fraud, especially fraud against taxpayers. If they're mm-hmm. cheating the welfare system, if they're cheating on their taxes, we want that reported, and we want them to be dealt with just like any other citizen in the state of Utah it has to face those problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are going after the worst first, and we found that that's very, very difficult. If you know, that we've kind of put the line in the sand and said we're going to start prosecuting crimes within polygamous communities, there still has been relatively few people prosecuted mm-hmm. because they are still very difficult cases to prosecute.
That's true.
I'm hoping that answers your question.
Did that answer your question? Okay, thank you. I know when I was still a child, it was in the 1950s that they were prosecuting the polygamists up here, too, in Utah. And they arrested several people from the group I was from. And the polygamist wives were taken to the grand jury, and they were questioning. And they couldn't get one single, and not one, because they all stood on the Fifth Amendment. They had to close the cases and let everybody go, because every single one of them stood on the Fifth Amendment.
And we've had cases where charges had to be dropped because the victim fled. And Arizona is facing the same problems, where a victim who was willing to testify then is coerced not to testify. And so mm-hmm. without that testimony, the case is dropped. And, you know, really that's a shame for everyone, including the polygamists, because that means that a perpetrator is getting away with a crime and a victim is not getting the help. Mm-hmm. And it means that people are still not as safe as they should
mm-hmm.
be. Yeah. You know, one of the other issues that you deal with prosecuting polygamy, I received a call a couple of days ago asking whether or not Utah prosecutes adultery, because adultery is against the law in Utah. And I checked with all the prosecutors, I checked with the courts, I checked with all the people, and no one in the last 60 or 70 years has heard of a case of adultery being yeah. prosecuted. And, you know, I think everyone can agree that adultery is a problem, that it hurts families, it hurts children, it hurts women, but for some reason, prosecutors have decided that they would not prosecute it. On the same hand, lawmakers aren't ready to take adultery off of the law books.
Yeah. Okay. Well, one of the questions that we get a lot, you answered about why don't we just arrest them all and throw them all in jail. Another question we get a lot, I'm sure you get it as well as I do, and that is, when a caller has called in and asked that, why don't you just leave them all alone?
Right.
One from one spectrum side to the other.
And you know, I think that's a good question as well. I mean, right now the courts have upheld the polygamy laws. The states still have the right to regulate marriages, and that's why adultery laws are upheld. But sodomy laws have been struck down. Fornication laws have been struck down. After the Lawrence ruling in Texas, they said that adults have the right to, consenting adults have the right to have sex with each other without the government interfering.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, the courts have upheld that the states still have the right to regulate marriage, and that's why polygamy laws and adultery laws are still being upheld.
Interesting. That's an interesting. Okay. I don't know quite how to ask this question. There are a lot of incestuous activities going on in some groups. Is there anything at all that can be done about that?
The Utah Attorney General's office does have active investigations into incestuous relationships in polygamous groups. They are difficult to investigate. They're difficult to prosecute. We are still hoping that some of these groups will work with authorities and that they will say that we will no longer practice incest within our groups. We've been very fortunate in asking and seeing that most of the polygamous groups have now told us that they will no longer marry girls under the age of 18. They say, we will not do that. That's been a huge, huge step.
Mm-hmm.
Ending underage marriages will make a big difference between the relationship between the government and the polygamous groups.
Mm-hmm.
We also think it's very important that if incest is part of their religious or their custom, that it needs to come to an end, because
mm-hmm.
it's a crime. I don't think anyone will support you in saying that it's not a crime and that it needs to end.
Mm-hmm.
And also we need to make sure that they live all of the laws of the state of Utah. I've had most polygamists say, we will live all the laws except one. And, you know, if we could get to that point with everyone, that would be a big step.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the truth is, when we work with this issue, polygamy really takes kind of a back seat. I mean, most of the issues we're dealing with are issues of lack of trust, lack of communication, isolation, and it has something to do with polygamy, because they're practicing polygamy. That seems to be what has led to the isolation,
right,
and
mm-hmm.
the lack of communication.
Right.
So we're trying to find areas where we can agree, where we can work together, and try to build on mm-hmm. on that trust.
I know of a couple of marriages recently in the past few months where the girls were 16, years old, around that age, and they would not, if you talked to either one of any of them today, they would say, no, I wanted this. And yet, and originally they did not want it, and they were threatened, coerced, you'll be destroyed if you don't do it. You know, this kind of pressure put on them, where in the end they finally did it to please their family. What right. do you say about something like that?
Well, if the girl's under the age of 18 and she's entering into a bigamous relationship, she's actually committing a second-degree felony, and we will prosecute people for child bigamy. If Attorney General Mark Shurtleff went to the legislature, asked them to pass a law that if they commit bigamy and it involves a girl under the age of 18, that not only is it's no longer just a third-degree felony, but a second-degree felony, punishable up to 15 years in prison. And we've let all of the polygamists know and put them on notice that if they do this, we will prosecute them and we will go after them, and you know, no ands, ifs, or buts. I mean,
but again, you have to have a victim.
You still need a victim to testify. And truthfully, that's the saddest thing about all this. The Rape Crisis Center gets calls all the time from rape victims who call for help, and it's a good thing that they're calling to get help, but they don't want to get involved in the judicial system and to testify against the perpetrator. I understand that. I wish I could tell them, please have the courage that it will make a difference. Mm-hmm. But for some victims, they're just not willing to do that. Yeah. And even in Carolyn Jessup's case, she said, you know, and that wasn't a rape case, but in that instance, her main concern was just having custody of her children.
Right.
So she didn't care right. about the prosecution. All she wanted was to make sure that she had her children mm-hmm. and that her children were safe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She did very good with that. Okay, let's take a call from Diana from Sandy. She has a question about Tom Green. Diana?
Yeah.
Yes, welcome to the show.
Hi, I have two questions.
Okay.
I'll see if that works.
Okay.
And I would like to ask them of the Attorney General.
I'm not the Attorney General.
I mean, the office. I cannot remember your name. Mr. Murphy, right?
Yes, right.
Okay, sorry about that. My first question, and I'll ask both of them and then get off the air. My first question is, I understand that you're going after the more heinous crimes, and I wondered how it came to be that prosecution of Tom Green happened. And then an entirely different question is, I'm a mom, and it seems like to me that mothers that consent to their daughters entering a polygamous relationship ought to be accountable for a form of child abuse. And I'll get off the phone so you can take that.
Okay, the first question about Tom Green is a good question. When Attorney General Mark Shurtleff first took office, we had an investigator who worked on the Tom Green case, and basically in that case they found essentially sexual relationships going on with a 13-year-old girl, you had welfare fraud, and you had bigamy. And what our investigator found was that this was not an isolated case, and he said that really there are other children out there who are not being protected, and that's where the Attorney General basically told me, he says, I couldn't sleep at night because the fact that there are children out here who are not protected by the law just like everyone else. And so in that case, Tom Green was charged with bigamy, but he was charged with bigamy because he was also charged with rape of a minor and welfare fraud. So the bigamy essentially became an enhancement to the other crimes, mm-hmm. but the prosecutor still had to prove the bigamy charge, and it was actually a very difficult charge to prove.
Hmm.
The second issue, what was the second question?
Why aren't the mothers charged?
Why aren't the mothers? You know, they can be. You know, Warren Jeffs was charged as being an accomplice of rape to a minor because he performed the marriage between a young girl mm-hmm. and an older man. And at one time, there were charges against Rodney Holm was a police officer. He was charged with bigamy, and he was charged with unlawful sex with a minor. His first wife was also charged with conspiracy to commit unlawful sex with a minor by coercing her younger sister in being involved in this bigamous relationship.
I didn't know that part of it.
The victim in that case, however, fled the state, refused to testify, and so at the preliminary hearing, there wasn't enough evidence to bring against Rodney Holmes' first wife, and so those charges were dropped. There was barely enough evidence to keep the bigamy and the unlawful sex with a minor against Rodney Holmes. Eventually, she did come and testify, and Rodney Holmes was convicted of unlawful sex with a minor and bigamy. Again, the absolute need for a victim to testify.
A victim to come forward. That's true. Okay, we have on line two, Janet. Hello, Janet.
Hello.
Yes, do you have a question for us?
Yes, Doris, I do. It's a comment. The young lady that called in about prosecuting all the people that are committing bigamy, wouldn't they also have to prosecute all of these men and women that are living together in sin, shacked up, whatever? And that's not practical. I'm not for polygamy, but they can't have their rights taken away completely if everybody else doesn't get charged also. And I'll listen to your comments after I hang up. Is that okay?
That's fine. Thank you, Janet. Uh-huh. Good night.
You know, that's a good question. I mean, Utah's bigamy law is worded in an interesting way. You're guilty of bigamy if you marry, you purport to marry, or you cohabitate. So someone like Hugh Hefner and his three girlfriends could be charged with bigamy in the state of Utah because he's cohabitating with three different women. I don't think anyone is calling for the prosecution of Hugh Hefner and his three girlfriends. But, you know, it does become an issue of fairness. If we do go after people for polygamy, we probably should be going after people for adultery. We should be going out with people who are cohabitating with several different women, whether or not there is a religious ceremony or not. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things our attorneys argued when they argued that the polygamy law should be upheld, is that you could be charged with bigamy whether or not you did it for religious reasons or for non-religious reasons as well.
I think one of the things that I would make a comment on this part of it is that the polygamy groups almost unanimously will require polygamy for salvation, and so they use it as the carrot to bring the people along, where Hugh Hefner is not interested in the salvation issue. I mean, that's not part of why he does it.
You think?
So, I don't think so. Maybe I've got that wrong, too. I don't know. Okay, a caller's question has for Paul, why can't states bring suit against LDS Church as the originators of polygamists?
No, that's ridiculous. you know, there have been problems in every church, and, you know, one of the solutions I think that may bring an end to the underage marriage and the incest is that there could be lawsuits. You know, the Catholic Church had a real problem of priests abusing children, and it took hundreds of lawsuits to essentially cripple the largest church in the world with these lawsuits, but I think it made some profound changes within the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. I think we may see the same thing happening within the polygamist groups. It could take some of these victims saying, you know, this is systematic, there is an ongoing problem. They could be bringing lawsuits, and that could bring an end to the practice just by crippling them with lawsuits.
What an interesting concept that
but,
is.
But, you know, I think it's an unfair question, because all churches really have some dark moments in their history. You know, most of the Christian churches supported slavery at one time. That was an awful thing, mm-hmm. and they ended it. I don't think that the churches today should be punished for the sins that took place mm-hmm. 150 years ago in supporting slavery. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be wrong to condemn the LDS Church for what happened 150 years and make them be
for held. What they're doing today.
Yeah.
No. Okay, Sherry from Clinton. Sherry?
Yes.
Okay, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What can we help you with?
Hi. I was just wondering, as a tax-paying, law-abiding citizen, how many of these polygamists are on welfare that we're paying out of our tax money for them to break the law? And I'll take your answer off the air.
And that's one of the things you said you're working with.
Yeah, no, that is a great question. When we first started holding our safety net meetings, one of the things we discovered was that there was less fraud than we expected. We found out that in certain communities there was a large number of women and children who were receiving welfare assistance, but what we found out was that they were eligible for that welfare assistance because they had such big families and so many children. And so we've talked with the polygamous groups about the idea that if you're going to have large families, that you also should be able to support those families. People resent the idea of someone not taking care of their own children. And that happens outside of polygamy as well. There could be a man who has relationships with many different women, has many different children, but he doesn't support those women and children. And so the women and children go to the state for assistance. Mm-hmm. People resent that. They don't like the idea that there's someone out there that is doing this and not supporting his family. And so we've talked with some of the polygamous groups, and they are encouraging their members to get off the welfare rolls and to start supporting their own families. The one thing we don't want is we don't want women and children who need food and shelter not to be able to get food and shelter.
Right.
So if a man does say, I'm going to do this, we don't want the children to suffer and for them not to have food. Mm-hmm. We'd rather the children to have food, but we also want to encourage the men to support their own families. If you can have a big family, you should pay for it.
You should be able to afford it before you start having the big families. Okay, Paul, what can we citizens do to help your office do its job? And what can we citizens do to be helpful to the polygamists?
I like that. You know, for the past 5 years, I've been talking to a lot of people, and usually everybody says they know the answer to the whole polygamy problem.
I'm sure.
But what I'm looking for, and I still look for, is for people who are willing to help. And what I found is there have been a lot of people that just have good ideas, or they have skills, or they may be able to write grants, or they might be able to provide shelter, they might be able to provide food, they might be able to provide mentoring or counseling. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of things to do, and if you send me an email at pmurphy@utah.gov. It's pmurphy@utah.gov. I will hook you up with our brand new safety net coordinator, and she will find something for you to do.
Plenty to do, no lack of that. So that would help both your office and the polygamists if people were get involved more.
Right, you know, and people look to the Attorney General and say, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? This isn't an issue just for the Attorney General's office. This is an issue for all of the state of Utah. This is a community issue. Mm-hmm. And so as a community, we should be rallying together. We should be working together and trying to solve the problems, identify the strengths within the groups, but also help if there is a need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's good. Okay. What are your feelings regarding and your concerns, if any, both pro and con, regarding the federal task force that Harry Reid wants to begin formulating regarding the polygamy in the Intermountain West?
Well, I have mixed feelings about it. I think there have been allegations for a long, long time about issues of tax fraud and welfare fraud and certain crimes that can only be prosecuted by federal investigators and prosecutors. And, you know, I think it would be good for the polygamist groups to once and for all find out whether or not that type of problem is going on. If it is, put an end to it, hold the people accountable, and make those crimes end. I know that the idea of a task force scares a lot of polygamous people, and they worry that they're going to be targeted because of their religious beliefs. My hope is that they will only go after the people who are committing the crimes. And two, the thing I like about Harry Reid's bill is that he also is promising $2 million in services. There is always a need for services for domestic violence victims, for child abuse mm-hmm. victims in polygamy and outside of polygamy. So if there's more money there, hallelujah.
So would that $2 million be mostly for only for the polygamy helps, or would it be just for the general?
It would be identified to help victims within polygamous communities. And we received a federal grant like that before to specifically help domestic violence victims within polygamous mm-hmm, communities. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that there is a lack of money, there is a lack of funding for domestic violence services across the board. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Clarence from West Valley, has a comment on the previous call. Hello, Clarence.
Hello, Doris.
Hello. Welcome to the show. What can we help you with?
I just wanted to make a response and then a small comment.
Okay.
And the response was to the caller that made it sound like, you know, Mormon Church should be held accountable for polygamy that's going on today and in some way. And, you know, I think that's not wrong. But, however, I do think that they should get up and make a public statement that polygamy was wrong, past, present, or future. So that's my comment on that.
Okay. Okay, they are making it a point that they don't have anything to do with polygamy in the current times, but I don't know that they've ever acknowledged it as being wrong, so
yeah,
that's a good point that you've
that's
made.
That's my only comment.
Okay, thank you, Clarence.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Good night.
Bye.
Paul, a caller has called in, and they want your phone number. If you need to, your office phone number, I'm sure, and for any questions they might have, do you want to give the phone number out?
Absolutely. It's 801-538-1892, and I'll repeat it. It's 801-538-1892, and would love to talk to you. Sometimes it feels like that's the only thing I do get to talk about, but it's an important issue, and we really are looking for people who can help.
Good deal. So if anybody wants to help the polygamists, call Paul Murphy. He'll put you to work with helping them. Okay, loaded question.
Okay.
Should polygamy be abolished or sustained legally?
You know, that's an issue for lawmakers. And
personal opinion.
My personal opinion? That's.
Would you rather not say?
Well, you've invited me here as the spokesperson for the Attorney General's office, and our duty is to uphold the law. And the law right now is just that bigamy is illegal.
Okay.
I think it is an important question for lawmakers. I think it's an important issue for the public to decide whether or not bigamy should be a felony, whether or not it should be prosecuted, and whether or not resources should be made to go and prosecute people. Right now, basically what I'm hearing from almost everyone is that they don't care what consenting adults are doing. They just want to make sure that children are protected. And so it's kind of a hands-off approach that most people seem to be supporting. Mm-hmm. But I think there is going to come a time where the courts are going to be asked again whether or not states have the right to regulate marriage. And if they decide that states don't have the right to regulate marriage, then you're going to have more same-sex marriages. You're going to have more polygamy, and you're going to have, you know, other arrangements that we didn't have before. But those are the tough questions mm-hmm. that courts and lawmakers get to decide. So I'll let them decide rather than me.
Stay out of it. Okay. Good answer. All right. In line three, we have Louise from Sandy. She's got some questions on educating groups. Hello, Louise.
Hello. Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
I have a question about the, this has nothing to do with religion. It's mostly just birth rate. I have read that there are 106 males born for every female, and then by the time they reach marriageable age, there are like 98 males for every 100 females, but basically it's one-on-one, you know, one-for-one. And do these women realize that when they are living under this mindset, this concept, that they are sentencing their sons to not being able to stay in the group and being able to be married? And I'm thinking if we have these people that believe this, if we can, you know, kind of keep educating them with ideas, maybe that would fight the idea that they're laboring under the concept, and they could see that maybe there's a few things that they need to take into consideration. It seems like it's not fair to the boys, and it's, you know, not fair to the girls both. Thank you. I'll mm-hmm. hang up so I can listen on the TV, and I appreciate being able to call in. Thank you.
Thank you, Louise. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I've met some highly educated women who have had lots of choices, and they choose plural marriage. And I think it's, she said that it's not a religious question, but for the most part, I think religion is what is driving it. They believe that their salvation is dependent on living plural marriage, and that's what they choose to live, and they think it's the right way to go. We are also finding in many polygamous groups that not everybody decides to live polygamy. And it's my understanding that in most polygamous groups, only about a third actually practice polygamy. And but, you know, the numbers is an issue.
mm-hmm. It is an issue, and you look at it like that. Now, we have basically touched on this next question. A caller has called in and asked, so maybe you want to address it again briefly. We are getting close to the closing here. Is abuse and crime rate different between polygamy groups and the regular public?
We don't know. You know, we've had certain groups where we think that the leaders were encouraging and practicing underage marriages, that, mm-hmm. that those types of crimes were higher than what you see in the general public. We think, for the most part, that the crime rate is likely probably the same, but we still think that the victims within those communities have so many barriers to getting help mm-hmm. that that's the biggest concern, that they're just not getting the same help as everyone else.
Not getting the same help, not having the freedom to talk about it. Okay, for just very quickly, if you could make one or two major changes that would help you do your job, what would it be?
You know, one thing that would be help me is that I wish that victims knew that even though we are reaching out, we're talking to different polygamous groups, that we still care about them. We worry about them and we want to make sure that they get help. And I guess the one thing that I want them to know is that help is available, that if you're in an abusive relationship, that it can stop and you can get help and your world will get better if you stop the abuse. You may not even want to leave your community, but the key that we would like to do is to stop the abuse. Two, I would like to see more people get to know and to work with the polygamists. They are a people and they are our neighbors and we should know them and we should find out about them, find out what their needs are and find out maybe you could learn something from them.
Mm-hmm.
There
mm-hmm.
are strengths within the polygamous communities. Instead of everything being us versus them, we should probably be talking more and learning from each other, because I think if we work together, we're going to solve a lot more problems.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We are getting close to the end of the program once again tonight, and we are certainly grateful, Paul, for you coming, taking time out of your night. I know you had other things planned for tonight and hope you can get to them. And we want to thank each one of you for coming. I did have a call come in that I didn't talk about, wondering what this gift is on the desk. This gift is written to whomever. It's for whosoever. In John 3:15 it says, whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have eternal life. This represents the gift that God gives of eternal life. In Romans 6:23, the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. You don't have to live polygamy to go to heaven. You don't have to belong to a polygamy group. You don't have to belong to any church to go to heaven. It's a gift from God. And just like a birthday gift or a Christmas gift, if it's sitting under the tree 10 years later, it's your name is on it, but you haven't taken it. So it really hasn't been your gift until you take it and claim it for yourself. Next week, we have a special guest as a woman who has, as a child, suffered through many years of incestuous abuse. And she'll be here to tell her story of emotional pain and how she was able to forgive, how she was able to overcome. And we just want you to be here next week and join us as Irene Broquet tells us her story. And if you know of anyone who happens to be in an abusive or incestuous relationship, would you please tell them to come and watch the show? I think that they'll be blessed. Encourage them to watch. Remember that Jesus Christ is the way to salvation, not polygamy. You have a standing invitation to join us every week on Polygamy, What Love Is This? Good night.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email at whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.